I think it was Landmark that we had those. Now, unfortunately, the feds have changed the rules, and we've had to go to other setups. Now we put detectable warnings there because that's what the federal government requires. So the feds didn't let us keep that rule, but at least we had something in place. I personally liked the way we have we would set up pedestrian signals, audible signals. They used to call them, now they call them pedestrian. But we would have a mobility instructor evaluate them. We would get consumers to evaluate them. And traffic engineering would also look at them. And once we all got the approval on a suggested corner, then it would be put in when we got the funds. But I think that was a very good way to do it. We had safeguards. We had input from different people with different, you know, different aspects of the situations. And it worked well. We also had the similar thing with transportation, and there are still several committees in transportation. I was on the ASAC committee for a long time, and they had to deal with issues of transit, fixed route transit, and paratransit. But when we were deciding on what our policy would be with respect to how bus drivers would call out the stops in San Diego. In fact, Charlene and I rode on a Route 11 round trip, and we tried out what we had recommended to make sure it would work. Of course, we kept a lot of what was originally there, that they were to call the stops at all lighted intersections, at all time points, transfer points. We also added another one, points of interest, and announced stops. Yeah, and the first stop after return, which is important because sometimes it's good to know that there's a stop there, or is it just a turn that's not important. So I think we have contributed a lot in access in San Diego. Now, unfortunately, sometimes with budget cuts and personalities, some of these committees are not as active as they used to be, but I think that can change, and I still think when I look at some of the things that we have and what other areas may or may not have, I think San Diego can be proud of what we've achieved with access, and I'm going to open it up to other people in the audience. I know Charlene has been here and served on lots of access committees, and I know Larry Freeman and Tom Trier have also been on several committees, and they can share any input on their perspectives as various degrees of travelers and just people involved in the community. And then I would be interested to see what you guys have to say about your areas and what you're doing that might be different. And then hopefully by then it'll be about 11:30 and it'll be time to close. Okay, let me know you want to speak and I will. Okay, Linguistat. Oh, that'd be great. Okay, Andy Caruso will help with the mic. We also have this one. I think it's
ready to go, I think. Okay. Okay, Lynn. Oh, thank you.
Hi, everybody. What I think we need to address as well with access is when we have access denial due to our guide dogs. I had a situation about a year and a half ago, and I discovered since Linda Woodbury left, there was no means to remedy this problem, and I think that that's in San Diego, and I think that this is something that we need to do because, yes, in this day and age, we still are getting access problems, and, it was in like a little convenience store downtown, and And I tried to explain it was a guide dog, and no dog. And I had nowhere to turn to. I called all over the place, and there was evidently nothing you could do about except just tell everybody else, hey, don't go in there. They didn't want my guide dog in there, so we'll hit them in the pocketbook. But there seems to be no way to remedy that, so I don't know. I think that's something we need to look into.
One problem that I am having, and I wonder if other areas are having, now, I would say one way, the one thing you can do is call the police. But also, when you call the police, you've got to know the law. You've got to tell them 365.5, because the odds are they won't know the law. And that's one area that probably we're weak on, but that really is the main, I would say, with an access denial, that is the main outlet you've got for you. And I know you can look at it and go, wait a minute, but I'm not sure, is that really the way to go when you want to try to educate someone and leave a good taste in their mouth? But sometimes you don't have that as an option. And so personally, that's what I would do, is call the cops. But one issue that I'm having with cabs, and I think where our transportation authority is kind of weak on it too, they're using, I will quite often, if I get refused on a cab, I will call the MTS, which runs our transportation, and they will report it. But here's the thing. If they say that cabs are not technically working for the cab company, they're only licensed to work, they're getting the radio service from that cab company, but technically, if the cab owns the cab company, they can enforce, it's a lot harder for them to enforce the access laws. And I said, wait a minute, but there's still a yellow cab, or it's still a San Diego cab, or it's still a whatever cab. I find that hard to believe that there's not some accountability. And so that's one loophole that they're finding in the law. Well, what they're doing is they'll still take the complaint, but they're very slow to investigate it. Because, oh, yes, Charlene.
One thing you have to do is realize priorities. To the public, to the commissions, to the police, we are low priority, not being accessible. Because there are a lot of crime calls, there's a lot of domestic violence calls, there's a lot of traffic calls, and other people have other things. So it really is people have to sort of realize we're low man on the totem pole for response. But the other part of it is tenacity does a lot. I know that the incident Lynn talked about, that one I turned into and talked to the police about it, that owner of that store actually was talked to. San Diego's made some changes. They don't have the code enforcement that they used to under when Linda was around. So we're going backwards. Some of the committees, kind of the power was taken away. They put the they combined two committees, the CRAB committee, which is Committee for for the Removal of Access Barriers, and CRC, which is another advisory group. They put it under the mayor, and basically they don't have a whole lot of power. It's like we have one, but they're not really doing a lot. Yeah, they found a way to do it. They also combined the TAC committee with another transportation, SDAC, and I'm they're making my noise. Because what they've done is they're taking away some of the hands-on structure, go through. It used to be that TAC, I call it like software hardware. TAC did the hardware. We went through, we walked through trolleys that were purchased, and I made a lot of changes on the low floor trolleys that were purchased. For instance, they originally were going to have a, what they call a stanchion. It's the bar that's at the on the one end. They were going to have it at both ends, so if you came in the accessible door with the plate that came out, they call it a bridge, you would then come in and have to, if you were in a chair, swing around a pole. And it was debated if that would give you actually the clear space. And the other big problem is trying to get around that pole and passengers and all kinds of other stuff. So I said, take it out. And they said, but we need people to be able to stand. And I said, I just saw another trolley at the company. I went, actually was paid to go to the manufacturer's site in Sacramento for cement, and they had one that Portland was going to get, and it had a stanchion that had three bars on it. Well, if you ever play a game to see who's going to be first and go up the baseball bat, eventually you run out of handholds. Well, you do the same thing with people standing, but now they can have three times the number of people in the same spot holding on to the same pole. It's away from where people with disabilities are basically going to come in. And I told them, well, that's really good, because I found it with in cautionary yellow. So I said, okay, that helps people who are partial, but we also have blind people that board, and we need to let them know. So I got them to interrupt their lovely little pattern on the floor, and there is a disc at the base of the stanchion that is a different texture. So if you're using a cane and you hit a different texture, you should be alerted to look out why it changed. So now when a person is totaled, comes in, they have something to notify them that that is going to happen. Unfortunately, they don't always listen to us. We asked them to not put any seats in the wheelchair area. And they have some pull-down seats, which are now way too heavy. The San Diego and everybody, because of federal regulations, are going to low floor. And so you can enter through any door that comes in front of you. San Diego's still going to have a problem because we have four-size cars now. We have three different lengths of trains. So you never know where the doors are, kind of going to come. That's why we did the mat originally, because the only thing they could guarantee positioning, because the law says you have to have the door line up with a person or have an indicator for the doors. Well, how do you indicate it when you got all this different variables? So we said, okay, if you put a mat down that is a different texture, is different from the rest of it, then people could find out where it is and stand there. And sighted people seem to think that's a great idea because they like to stand there too. So I walk up and I ask, are you blind? And they go, no. I said, well, this is intended for blind people to get on the trolley. Come on behind me. But the new ones are geared so you can open, go in any door. So access is no longer confined for people in wheelchairs to the first car. People can get on any car they want to. To open the door, I'm trying to think. They're to the right of the door, to the lead end of the car, of the train. In North County, we have the buttons on the doors. And then there's a second button on the door that has the plate that comes out. And that throws people, because if you push that button and the doors are already open, they will close, because that's how it works. The plate comes out, and then the doors will reopen. And a lot of people panic because they think, they aren't going to be able to get on. But unfortunately, as well as having done a lot of stuff in the past, they are trying to water down the strength of some of the committees. And It's just not a priority in a lot of ways. And so I think education is one of the big things, and why it is so important, because sighted people don't have to fight to get from point A to point B, so I shouldn't have to either. And I think that's one of the big things we need to do, is more education to people of why all of this is important. And don't just say it's for the people with disabilities, because it helps people for other things too. People with cognitive problems get some benefits from it, like calling stops. People who are busy with their cell phones and everything else with a, they're called APS, audible pedestrian signal. And that's the new one is to use the Polara type. They can't say by brand, but they can say type, which is the ones that announce the street and when you can walk and have the little, no, it's not the countdown. That's different. It has a little beacon thing, little noise, so you can locate the button, which is very helpful, because it also lets you know when that button, you hear that is a signalized an audible signal. When we had the chirp and the cuckoo, you didn't know for sure if you had to do that, and finding the pole really interesting too. So San Diego does have some variances to the Title 24 and to ADA, but they're combining more and more and working towards more and more to combine the two. And so Title 24 is within the ADA standards. And the other part to remember is always that they're minimum requirements, so people can go above and beyond.
Okay, and now I know Tom Trier and Larry Freeman, you've both been on those committees, and some of that, maybe you could talk about some of the things that were meaningful to you about them.
Okay, Tom,
if you want to. Thank you, Charlene.
Morning. In my experience in traveling around in San Diego, it's somewhat varied over the years. We've had different types of buses that have come on. Now they're all one-step buses that have very little to do to set out a ramp for wheelchair people. I've noted that there is an inclination to put all disabled people in one grab bag. And whereas I'm sitting in the front seat, one of those side seats behind the driver on the door side, in a lot of these buses you have to lift up the seat on the side and also the one behind it to accommodate somebody in a wheelchair. And whereas people in wheelchairs can't just go anywhere on the bus to find the seat, I, blind man me, with legs that can stand up, walk, and move to another seat in the back, can accommodate other people with their needs. And I get told that there are no further seats further back, so I end up sitting there, and people in the wheelchairs still stuck outside because, I'm in the disabled section. Some drivers are good at naming off stops, others don't. But they're getting better at it, I think, on the whole. You just have to remind them from time to time. And then there are times when they're distracted, whether passengers or traffic or whatever comes about. And, other things like audible signals that work every once in a while. We have one in one intersection that has a way of being on again, off again, on again, off again. Unfortunately, with that particular intersection, following the traffic is relatively easy, but I figure as long as they saw fit to spend the money and get the workers out there to put the hardware into position, why not use it, have it available? It should be going on again, off again. Another issue that comes about, it has new fashion of crosswalk that has an arrow that vibrates when the thing tells its walk sign is on the cross a certain street. And much beyond that, I think that covers it for my needs and my uses. Okay?
Yeah, that is Fairmont and El Cajon. Even though it's been working for about the last 6 weeks, it actually has been working. Yeah, because usually it would work about 3 days and then be off for about 2 months. A lot of us use a lot. Okay, Larry Freeman, because I know you were on Scrab for a while. Did you want to share?
Okay. Whoops, here's your mic.
Thank you. I think that you come across a lot of people that have a good knowledge of not only the transportation network, but also what is necessary out in the public arena to make the community as a whole more accessible. Walkways and entrances to them, there's buildings, there's a lot that goes into making a city accessible. And I know one particular occasion we had where we wanted to make a certain hillside acceptable, but there wasn't enough, at least at the time, there wasn't enough space both for a stairway, which would have made it safer for regular pedestrians to cross that area, but there wasn't a place for a ramp to be put in, so we decided to leave it as it was. So there are times when you say yes to accessibility, and there are also times when it may be more appropriate to leave something alone. So there were different angles to this that I hadn't ever thought of myself being involved with this issue. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to do that.
Thank you. I would like to hear from other areas to find out what you're doing with accessibility, with ADA, and how your cities are doing, and what are some of the unique things? Because I think every area probably has something to contribute, and we can all learn.
I think in the San Francisco Bay Area, CCB and the Lighthouse partnered a few years ago with the city of San Francisco to advocate for the installation of accessible pedestrian signals around town. And now I think we're up to over 100 intersections. Wow. So that's very, very positive. And then a lot of various CCB members are active on the various accessibility committees for the various transit agencies in the area. So I think there's been a lot of advocacy that has been done to make the public transportation more accessible. We at the Lighthouse are also working on developing some products to do that. We're working on developing a set of audible and tactile maps for the BART system, and I think if you've been at past conventions, you've seen some of our presentations on those. And we're also working on developing things called strip maps, which will be Braille and large print lists of bus stops or train stations with orientation information about each one. So there's quite a bit of work on advocacy that goes on in the Bay Area on accessibility.
I wanted to add something about the presentation with the BART system. And BART being such a large, the stations, and I guess downtown and everything of San Francisco, that maneuvering in there can be pretty daunting. and they've done a lot of construction. And if you saw the maps with the readers and the different devices to know where the escalators are all located and elevators, all this stuff was explained on the maps, tactily as well as verbally.
Who spoke? You are? Your name? I know Frank Welter. Debbie Kessler. Okay, and Chaz. Okay. Anyone else have anything to say? Oh, okay. Well, I guess this... Okay, then I guess... We're done early. Okay, actually, I might want to introduce everybody just to see who is here, just for fun to see who is here. And then I think what I'll do is I guess I will run downstairs. Have any of you, have all of you gotten the beds that we're selling? We have some. I have 8 of them. We had 9. Ed bought one because I was getting bored sitting there. I said, Ed, whether you want one or not, you're going to get a bed. And actually, he does like it. He did use it last night, and so that was good. And they're nice. They're kind of packed like, remember those sleeping bags that you would kind of pack in that little thing, and they kind of would roll up as kind of a cylinder? But they come out and you pull it out and it's just a nice blue doggy bed, and it's comfortable and they seem to like it. It's a travel bed. I think those of you who are GDA grads get one, and some people, Gaduck decided to get them as a fundraiser. And yeah, it is a little, it's $35, but I think it's something that's going to last a long time, and it is washable. That's another good thing. They're at the table, and I guess if we're quitting early, I guess that's where I'll run back to for a little bit. And so if some of you want to either pay dues or check out doggy beds, we can do that. Come join us, and we can have some fun.
Do you want to do intros?
But we could do introductions first, just because I think there are some people who weren't here earlier.
Yes, let me do that real quick.
And then we'll go down and play with doggy beds.
Here you go. Say who you are. My name is Allison Defner. I'm from San Diego.
My name is Charlene Ornelas, and I'm from San Diego.
My name is Frank Welty, and I'm from San Leandro with Jeep from GDB. He's a 3-year-old yellow lab.
I'm Debbie Kessler from Long Beach Lakewood area with Chaz from GDB 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. What?
Just your name. Who are?
Linda O'Neill, and I have Mara Lee.
And she's black.
Lab, my 6th guide dog.
How many?
6th.
I'm Tom Trier. I live in San Diego. I use a cane that I refer to as chicanery.
And I'm Debbie Sands. I probably am going to be one of your best friends because I'm a service animal education consultant. So I am going to be educating the public on access issues on behalf of all of you that have service dogs.
My name is Patrick Gould. I'm here from the great state of New York, representing the Olmsted Center for Sight.
Welcome, glad you're here.
Hi, I'm Lynn Gwizdak. I have a dog from the Seeing Eye, Landon. He's my 8th dog, and he's going to be 7.
Okay.
My name is Patty Gwizdak. I'm from San Diego, and I use a white cane.
Jingle bells?
Yeah, jingle bells. Yeah.
I'm Joe Smith from Sacramento.
Okay, let's catch.
Oh, gosh, that's another, I forgot. You know, my past 60. Joe Smith, before we go, yes, would you update us on the state guide dog board and what's going on?
Okay, well, here you go.
I think you met Joe Xavier. Joe Xavier, Joe Smith, they confuse us. And I'm Joe Xavier. I'm also from Sacramento. And would you like to finish the introductions before I update you? Okay.
I'm on this side. I'm moving here.
Monique McCorley from San Diego, and I use a white cane.
Larry Freeman, San Diego, I use a white cane.
Bill Gillespie from Santa Rosa, California. I am not dogless. I had to retire my guide dog 2 years ago.
Hi, I'm Nancy Younger from Riverside. I have Nigel, like Laguna Niguel, from Guide Dogs of the Desert. Thank you.
And I'm the very hardworking Andy Crusoe from Guide Dogs of America.
I take it this is where you'd like me to provide the update. So first of all, thank you for the opportunity for me to be here to represent the Guide Dog Board. And we very much welcome and appreciate your partnership in both in the community and as well as in support of the Guide Dog Board and the efforts of maintaining the standards for all guide dogs. Real briefly, a couple of updates. You may recall that the board is undergoing their sunset review at this time. And I think one of the things that I would share with this body is that when you think of the sunset review, a lot of people seem to think that if the guide dog board isn't continued, that whole function goes away. Well, in effect, the only thing that goes away if the guide dog board is not continued is the voice of the board in representation of the community. The statutes that exist for licensure and all of the other requirements still continue. They only do so without the voice of the community through the board in its policymaking and its enforcement processes. The board this year has undertaken another outreach campaign, and in to do so, we reached out to our various organizations, including this organization. We had an opportunity to speak with Mary Beth, as well as the council. We spoke with Donna in terms of identifying what would be the campaign that the community would see as being more effective and beneficial for the guide dog users. So in September, this past September, we had Guide Dog Day in Sacramento. It made a couple of the local newscast channels up there, so if you didn't, were not aware of that, you might look up some of those YouTube and some of those videos that were posted up there. We had presenters. We had a school that presented, a puppy raiser, an instructor, a user, and then one of the legislators came out and spoke to the media that was present and to the audience that gathered for that event. So the campaign is an education and etiquette campaign connecting with our business community, and it was interesting to hear some of the comments around business earlier. We partnered this year for the campaign with the California Restaurant Association. And the partnership has four essential elements. One is to develop training materials that can be shared with all of the community, of course, more specifically with the California Restaurant Association and their extensive membership. To provide articles for their membership and their publications on the use and the need for access for our guide dog teams. There will be YouTube videos that are developed. While some of us may not be appreciative of that, we realize that that is the media that many, many people key into, and so we want to get that message out there as broadly as possible. And then the other thing that will be occurring, and where I think this body can play a significant role throughout the state, is that from time to time we will need ambassador speakers to represent at the various California Restaurant Association events and activities that take place. So we'll look forward to taking advantage of your membership skills and work with Mary Beth and the leadership when those needs arise. The other thing
that the board did is to develop donor statements that lets individuals who donate to the various, to the three schools, know what the benefits of that donations include. And so those statements have been shared with the three schools. They've also been shared with our Better Business Bureau and the Attorney General's office, so that people who are visiting those websites know the benefits and the values of their contribution. So I can conclude my comments here, and if there's any questions that I can speak to, be glad to. And also, Frank is here, former board member. Nice to see you.
Joe, just you can pass this. I guess you can, if you, Lee, or if anyone thinks I'm stepping out of school, let me know. But I think that you can know that this morning, GDUC moved and passed a motion to continue our support for the guide dog during next year's sunset review process. So you might want to share that with your fellow board members.
But we also agreed that we also wanted to work more closely with you, that we agreed that we and established some of the things that GDUC used to do with you in the past that were really good programs. And so we look forward to a profitable, fruitful working relationship with you guys in the future.